Hello everyone.
Good, it's working.
Very nice to see you all. Welcome to our Future Melbourne Committee meeting, and it is Tuesday the 12th of April 2022, and it is meeting number 32 for us. We are here at the Treacy Centre in Parkville, which is magnificent and probably an underappreciated bit of architecture and facility in Melbourne, and we're delighted to be here in Parkville this evening. Thank you for joining us. Typical Aussie crowd, nobody sits in the front row. good to see. We're declaring the meeting open at 6 p.m. and I welcome everybody who's joining us here this evening, to all of our councillors and to staff and to our council business team and members of the public, of course. Thank you for being here with us, and thank you to everybody who's joining us on the live streaming service. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we govern, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people and the Bunurong Boonwurrung people, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present. We also acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we gather, the Jaja Wurrung, the Tungurung and the Wadawurrung peoples, and also pay respect to their elders past and present, and we confirm our commitment to our reconciliation journey, recognising that every effort we make to strengthen relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples has benefits for all Victorians. As I said earlier, this meeting is being streamed live, and an audio and video recording will be published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be put on our Council website as soon as practicable. Can we all just check our mobile phones, please, to see that they are off or on silent for the duration of the meeting? That would be wonderful. The agenda this evening comprises six reports from management, and I'm noting that we have received apologies from Councillor Chang and also Councillor Louie. Thank you. Councillors, before we get underway this evening, can we please note that if you have a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020, please disclose the nature and type of that interest prior to consideration of the item. Thank you very much. We're now moving to confirmation of minutes of previous meeting, and I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 31 that was held on Tuesday, the 5th of April 2022. Thank you, Councillor Campbell, and a councillor to second that. Councillor Hakim, thank you very much. Councillors, I'm putting this motion to the vote. All those in favour of adopting the minutes, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried, and we're underway. Thank you. Councillors, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you'd like to discuss at this point? It's asthma, I promise. There's nothing more than that. Nothing. Thank you. At this point, what we do in accordance with our governance rules is we note the submissions that have been received and the requests to speak that have been received in relation to each agenda item this evening. So please bear with me as we go through these. And if you don't hear your name but you wanted to present on an item this evening, I can ask you at the end and we can update our records. In relation to agenda item 6.2, which is planning application TP-2021-110, which is 95 to 101 Powlett Street, East Melbourne, there's been a request to speak from Sally Shepherd, Tony Watson, Greg Bizanella on behalf of who is the Heritage and Planning Convener on behalf of the East Melbourne Group, Jason Barnfather from Squareback, Chris Stribley from Sarah Stribley, and Luke Peary from Primeland. We've had items of correspondence from Sally Shepherd and Eric Smith, Tony Watson, Jeffrey Croke, Neil from the Graff Elms Foundation, Greg Bizanella and Ian Mitchell and Marie Back from the East Melbourne Group. In relation to agenda item 6.3 this evening, you're going to, let's do it this way. Good. All right. That's a request to speak from Ian Mitchell. Thank you. The next item is item 6.3, Planning Application TP-2021-326, which is 120W, which is 120 West Toorak Road, South Yarra. Request to speak from Billy Rabakis at Urbis and Ed Glenn from Powell and Glenn. And items of correspondence from Greg Moore and B. McNicholas, who is a director of Walk-in St Kilda and Environs. In relation to agenda item 6.4 this evening, Ministerial Planning Application TPM-2019-4/A, which is 102 to 108 Jeffcott Street in West Melbourne. And it does incorporate 355 to 369 Spencer Street and 371 to 383 Spencer Street, West Melbourne. We've had a request to speak from Robert Carletti from Tract, and also an item of correspondence from Robert Carletti. In relation to agenda item 6.5 this evening, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C387 Hoddle Grid Heritage Review dash final adoption, a request to speak from Luke Denham at Hall and Wilcox, and an item of correspondence from Luke Denham and also Tristan Davies from Melbourne Heritage Action. In relation to agenda item 6.6, North Melbourne Heritage Review, commencement of Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendments C402 and C403, we've had an item of correspondence from Lorna Hannon. Now, was there anybody apart from Ian who's here this evening that would like to speak to any of those items, but I did not mention your name? All good at the moment? Excellent. Well, the way we work is that as we consider each item, we will ask the submitters, the people that requested to speak, to come up to this podium here where there's a microphone, and we will, and a lot of people who come regularly know that we allow 3 minutes for presentations, to let you know how you're going with time. We do ring a bell at 2 minutes, so that you know you've got 1 minute left, and another bell again at 3 minutes. And if you could please finalise your presentation at that time, it would be appreciated. Thank you very much. Now, one of our favourite bits of Future Melbourne Committee meetings, and particularly now that we've started taking our meetings once a month out to our neighbourhoods, is to hear public questions. And we allow 15 minutes at the start and at the end of our meetings for members of the public to ask questions. They should be genuine questions. They can't be in relation to any item on our agenda, because that would be a submission, so we could slip you into the presentation. So questions are genuinely about questions that are of interest and importance to you. And we ask that they be no longer than 90 seconds. I've made it sound so boring, but really it is part of one of the most dynamic parts of our Future Melbourne Committee meetings. Now, during COVID, we have changed our rules a little bit to enable people to participate, particularly if they're joining us virtually. And I can let you know that we have received 4 written questions for consideration this evening, and we're going to do those before I ask any members of the public here if they have questions. And I'm noting that as we all take turns reading those questions out, depending on the portfolio, we're literally reading those questions verbatim. We are not attesting to the veracity or the factual nature of those questions. We read them verbatim and then we provide a response. And that means we can now get going. And I'm going to go first to Councillor Dr. Olivia Ball. And Councillor Ball is the Chair of the Health, Wellbeing and Belonging Portfolio. To you, Councillor Ball. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I have a question from Denise Rosenberg. Her question is, does Council plan to celebrate the 120th year of the Royal Park Golf Course, which is next year? And I have a response from Cathy Kiss, the Acting Director of Recreation and Waterways. She writes, the Royal Park Golf Club was founded in 1903, initially operating at an 18-hole golf course and reverting to a 9-hole course on its current location in Royal Park in 1911. While initially managed by a local club, the Royal Park Golf Course has been operated and maintained by the City of Melbourne since 1970. Many thousands of people have played and learned to play golf here. From July this year, the Royal Park Golf Course will be managed under the Active Melbourne Recreation Facilities Contract. And recognising the 120th year of the course in 2023 will be an opportunity to celebrate the ongoing important role of Royal Park and the golf course, supporting participation by the community in sport and physical activity. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you very much, Councillor Dr. Ball. I'm now reading out the second question that we've also received from Denise Rosenberg, and I'm doing that as Chair of the City Transport Infrastructure and Operations Portfolio. And the question is, how do we get the Department of Transport to put safe tram stops in Royal Parade as they have done on most other roads around the inner city? And the response comes from Daniel Bowden, who's our Acting Director of City Strategy. And it says, as acknowledged in the question, the provision of safe DDA-compliant tram stops is the responsibility of the Victorian Government. Royal Parade is an arterial road that is owned and managed by the Department of Transport. The City of Melbourne's Transport Strategy to 2030 supports improving the safety and the efficiency of tram stops throughout our city, as well as making all tram stops DDA-compliant and advocating, of course, for safer roads, including reduced speed limits. Work on these priorities has included working directly with the Department of Transport to install platform stops and provide pedestrian crossings for safe access. And we've seen particularly the rollout of the super stops across the city, which prioritise access. Almost all of the tram stops on Royal Parade are yet to be upgraded to meet DDA requirements. We will continue to work and advocate to the Department of Transport for upgrades to these stops, particularly in light of the completion of the Melbourne Metro project planned for 2025 with a station on Royal Parade at Grattan Street, and then the interaction of DDA compliant platforms there and out into our tram network, and that seamless interaction and experience for people using our public transport network. This will increase, of course, the Melbourne Metro project. This will increase the need for safe DDA-compliant stops along this important corridor that serves key destinations, including the university, the biotech precinct and hospitals. So, Denise, thank you very much for your question. The next question comes from Madeline Dehan, and I'm again answering, I'm putting this question and then answering them. And the question is pedestrian safety. The zebra crossing for pedestrian access in Gatehouse Street near the children's playground is unsafe as drivers regularly do not stop. Would it be possible for council to look at measures to improve safety here? And Craig Stevens, our Director of City Infrastructure, has said that we will investigate these measures, Madeline, to improve pedestrian safety at this zebra crossing, such as raising the crossing physically and other traffic calming approaches. We will be, it will be required that before we do that, we'll need to consult with local impacted residents, and we will also consult through the Parkville Residents Association prior to finalising a solution. And this work will be included in our Capital Works program for the next financial year. So that consultation will start shortly. I'm just looking at the President of the Residents Association, Rob Moore, to know that that is coming. Now, for our last question this evening, in this section, I'm going to ask Councillor Leppert, who is the lead on our environment portfolio.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. The second question from Madeline Dehan is on recycling, and the question is, with the introduction of more recycling bins, is Council able to provide smaller or other options for those of us who have limited space in our backyards to accommodate them? And our Director of Waste, Georgia Pinder, has provided an answer. The City of Melbourne offers a standard size 120-litre recycling bin. The option of a smaller 80-litre or larger 240-litre recycling bin is available. And I'm advised that officers will contact Madeline directly to make that offer to her. And if anyone else is interested, of course, they can contact the City of Melbourne. Lord Mayor, you said that was the last question, but I've got on my script here, there's another
yes,
one. Shall I hand
I
over
meant,
to
I
Councillor Dr. Ball for
passed.
A question from Virginia Maxwell? Thanks,
Thank
Lord.
You.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Virginia's question is a little long. It reads, is Council able to provide an update as to when the Quality Hotel on Royal Parade in North Parkville will cease to be part of the Victorian Government's Homelessness Hotel Emergency Response Initiative? She says, while many residents understood and were supportive of this initiative during the COVID crisis, there is no doubt that it led to a significant increase in the use and distribution of illegal drugs in the vicinity of the hotel, including in Mile Lane and Royal Park. It would be helpful if Council could outline what steps it has taken to address this situation in our predominantly residential neighbourhood over the past 2 years, and its mitigation strategies if similar programs are implemented in the future. Thank you for the question. I will now read out a response provided by our General Manager of Community and City Services, Linda Weatherson. She writes, as noted in your question, the responsibility of Homelessness Hotel Emergency Response Initiative is that of the Victorian Government. Council officers have made contact with Homes Victoria and will provide you with a written response when it is confirmed as to when the Quality Hotel on Royal Parade will cease to be used as part of the initiative, which is to say we're not sure when. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Dr. Ball. Now, we do have time, as I said now, but also at the end of the meeting for any member of the public who's here this evening to ask a question. And I'm just looking, if you do, could you please put up your hand? Now we'll invite you to come and take the microphone. None at this, oh, here we go, just here.
A question that the question to Councillor Lippitt reminded me of. Council doesn't take recycling of polystyrene, which is the symbol 6 on the recycling symbol. If I lived in an adjoining suburb, I could take it to the Yarra Council recycling, but they don't want ours. There are other surrounding councils. We also don't do recycling of mercury lamps. I've run council, I've asked questions, nobody's got back to me. It would be handy to know at some stage if there is a facility for that sort of recycling and how we could access it.
Can we take that on notice? Yes, so we'll take that on notice and Sally will be able to come back to you. Thank you for the question, very interesting. And I'm sure we'll all hear what that response is. Thanks, Evan. All right, any other questions at this stage? There's more time at the end. Just getting warmed up, I know. So look forward to more questions at the end of the meeting. We now move on to item 6.1 on the agenda, which is Neighbourhood Key Issues and City of Melbourne Projects for Parkville. And I'm going to ask our Director of Community Development, Rushda Halith, to come and make a presentation in relation to this report this evening. Thank you, Rushda.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Hello, councillors, and hello, everyone. It's really great to be here in community in Parkville here today. We have a presentation and some slides for you just to talk about the neighbourhood model, what's happening in Parkville, and council's role and upcoming projects and current projects in Parkville. Next slide, please. Thank you. So the City of Melbourne, we understand, is made up of and recognise that the municipality is made up of a diverse set of neighbourhoods with unique strengths, aspirations and priorities. We know that Docklands is very different to Parkville. We know that North Melbourne is yet again different to the CBD. So there's a real focus at City of Melbourne at the moment to really look at how can we better understand our community by place and really use these insights to drive how we do our work, how we make decisions and how we inform our planning for our short term as well as the long term moving forward. And part of this is having these FMC meetings in community. This is one of the opportunities that's come up as part of the neighbourhood approach. And we started with Carlton, and the last one was in West Melbourne, and now we're here in Parkville, followed by Docklands and North Melbourne over the next couple of months. make sure that was me.
That was my apologies.
That was Justin.
Heckler.
So this is an interesting snapshot of Parkville for your benefit, councillors, and for of people here today as well. The whole purpose of the neighbourhood model is also to really look at the different segments of our community and how we bring those different segments together. So when we say community, we're talking about the residents, we're talking about workers, we're talking about visitors, international students, the local businesses. And Parkville is home to an active community made up of all of those different segments. And some of the interesting statistics is Parkville's median age is 31, so quite a young suburb, and probably a reflection of the large number of international students who reside in Parkville as well. There's also quite a lot of diversity in Parkville, with 38% of people being born overseas, and a large percentage of people speaking a language other than English at home. Next slide, Jordan. When we look at some of the community assets, and we've been doing some neighbourhood planning at the moment, so we're talking to people in the different suburbs and neighbourhoods across our municipality. When we talk to people in Parkville, we're hearing about how much they love the beautiful open spaces, the parks, the history. The residents have really highlighted their love of the walking tracks, quiet streets, and beautiful heritage homes, and this sort of close to the city but very suburban feel. And also the sense of community and connectedness that they have in Parkville. We have two active resident associations in Parkville, the Parkville Association and the Parkville Gardens Resident Associations, who play a key role in connecting that community. In addition to the strong connected community in Parkville, Parkville is also an innovation precinct. It's home to a number of large major hospitals. It's also a research hub and really plays a critical role in Australia's innovation capability, powerhouse of research and development, specializing particularly in biotech and neuroscience as well. It's also part of sort of the city's North International Education Gateway, where we accommodate over 40,000 international students from 2019 numbers. Some interesting history about Royal Park and Parkville Gardens. So Royal Park is the largest open space in City of Melbourne within the municipality, covering 180 hectares. And it was also the site of the Acclimatisation Society of Victoria in 1861, part of which later became the Melbourne Zoo. And Parkville Gardens has a history connected to sport. It was built originally as the Athletes Village as part of the Melbourne Commonwealth Games in 2006, and designed to be a part of the legacy of lasting sort of social benefit from the Games. The site has then been transformed into an integrated and connected community with both private and social housing. So some interesting insights about Parkville. Some of the council services that you're familiar with, we have some of our childcare and family services that people who live in Parkville can access. City of Melbourne also manages and maintains many public spaces across Parkville, including Auckland Lane Reserve, the Avenue Reserve, we have the Royal Park, Manchester Lane Common Reserve, a number of different areas. There's also a number of sporting and recreation venues that we're part of managing, which includes some of the sporting fields such as Riders Oval, Brens Oval, the Western Oval, and so on. And they cater to 33 community sports organizations, as well as for schools to use as well. In addition to some of these services, this year we've also provided 22 permits. We've provided permits for 22 recreation activities, 28 public and private events, a daily air ballooning and skydiving site, 12 filming activities, and 2 weddings. So lots happening in Parkville this year. So some of the infrastructure investment in Parkville at the moment is the Grattan Street works to improve the greening and amenity in that area, which is in coordination with the opening of the Parkville station in 2025. There's a strong emphasis on community sports pavilion upgrades, the Western Over Pavilion redevelopment and so on, that also really has a focus on accessible and inclusive spaces for women in City of Melbourne sports facilities. So that's a strong focus in that investment in infrastructure development. There's also some investment in improving cycle infrastructure, and on top of that, there's sort of your investment in renewal works, footpaths, drains, parks, landscape and property as part of the work that City of Melbourne does in Parkville. Some of the other priorities in Parkville, current and upcoming. So the Parkville Heritage Review. So the Heritage Review in Parkville is the latest study in a rolling program of heritage reviews to protect and celebrate heritage places and neighborhood character across the municipality. And there was some community consultation on this in Parkville between the 2nd of February and the 7th of March to really understand where to test some questions with community and really understand to improve the City of Melbourne's sort of knowledge and understanding of existing heritage places in this area to help with our planning. The Royal Park Master Plan Review will be recommencing in July 2022, having experienced a number of pauses during the last couple of years because of COVID. And lastly, I wanted to talk a little bit about the neighborhood planning work. And there's a QR code on there if you wanted to just sort of have a look and get onto the Participate website. So the idea is really getting out to community to talk to the different segments of our community to understand what are the strengths, the assets, and the priorities and the challenges in the respective neighbourhoods, including Parkville. That will then feed into how we really think about our short-term and long-term priorities at City of Melbourne and how we can then partner with community to take action and respond to some of those priorities that are coming out. So the consultation on neighbourhood planning for Parkville commenced on the 1st of March and is running till the end of April. So there's still time, lots of different opportunities to get involved, lots of pop-ups and different community activation activities happening in the area, and invite councillors and members of the public if they'd like to participate. Thank you.
Thank you, Rushta. That was excellent and comprehensive, and I know a major piece of work in pulling these neighbourhood key issues and then plans together as we go forward. So thank you very much. Councillors, were there any questions for Rushta at this point? No, thank you. Well, then I'm going to move the motion this evening that's appearing on the screen, which is to note the overview and upcoming key initiatives so that Rushta and her team can keep going. And I'm looking for a councillor to second this motion. Councillor Ball, thank you very much. Well, I love Parkville. It's such an amazing neighbourhood and a key part of our municipality in the City of Melbourne. Some of the things that we love about Parkville, of course, is that it has the most open space of any of our neighbourhoods, which surprises many people who don't fully appreciate the significance of Royal Park in particular and many of the other open spaces around this neighbourhood. For many of us, we've had some sort of experience with the university presence in Parkville. For me, I studied my undergraduate there and many other interactions over the years and ongoing commitment to the university. And the tentacles of our university go far and wide. I also appreciate the work that is going into bringing these neighbourhood updates together so that we are doing the deep dive into not just what do we love about these neighbourhoods and Parkville tonight, but what are the needs of the community? What are the strengths? What are the development points? And what resources, importantly, can the City of Melbourne direct to continue to nurture and support Parkville? And that's why it's so important that Rushta and her team are bringing these reports together. It is always wonderful to reflect on the positive attributes of the villages and communities that make up marvellous Melbourne, but of course most of our work is focused on how we can improve and make things better for our residents, students, workers and other stakeholders who interact with this neighbourhood. It is serendipitous, of course, that we meet in Parkville today, the day that the Commonwealth Games for 2026 was announced. You may have missed it because so many other things going on at the moment, but it is a momentous announcement, and we're delighted at the City of Melbourne that the Commonwealth Games are coming to Victoria in 2026. Of course, it was 2006, the last Commonwealth Games, that saw the development of Parkville Gardens under special powers of the state government. Tom, I see you there. Thank you for being here. And we know that there'll be more purpose-built Commonwealth Games accommodation as a result of the plans to 2026, and I'm sure that we've learnt a lot from the experience there in Parkville Gardens, things that have worked well and things that we can continue to improve, and that's a big part of our ongoing interactions as well, so thank you. Of course, the biggest new major project really in Parkville is the Melbourne Metro project, that will deliver a brand new train station, not just a little one, a big train station that makes this neighbourhood more connected than ever, bringing people into this precinct around the city, and then of course transporting people from here right across Greater Melbourne and Victoria. It is at the epicentre of medical research in our hospital precincts, and we know will continue to be a major mover of workers, particularly in and out of this precinct, which is important to the vibrancy, the relevance and the international significance of this precinct that we're so proud of in so many ways. Now, it was serendipitous as well tonight that I met a couple of our residents who I hadn't met before, who reminded me that in amongst all of those amazing features of Parkville, there are residents. And there are residents, diverse residents that come from lots of different backgrounds who have different capabilities, who contribute in different ways, and the importance of having that diversity reflected in the services that we provide and that are accessible in the accommodation that's available in this neighbourhood and in the community infrastructure that's provided is absolutely key, and it was great to hear tonight about more detail about the 7,400 residents of Parkville, their unique identity characteristics and the ways that we can respond. I'm so pleased we've got two residents' associations in this neighbourhood, many social media groups that are connecting residents, businesses, families, workers, students and visitors, and 38% of our residents here in Parkville are born overseas, speak a language other than English, with Mandarin, Cantonese and Spanish being the dominant languages, and I think really reflecting that dynamic nature of our knowledge economy and university and research precinct. So for those insights that I've taken from the report so far and the good work, but I think importantly the better informed decision making that we can do together to continue to support this neighbourhood is really a reflection of this new model that we're applying at the City of Melbourne that we're all very proud of. So for all of those reasons, I'm happy to move this motion this evening. Over to you, Councillor Dr. Bull. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I have very little I could possibly add. I'm sure we're all filled with pride and devotion to the suburb of Parkville. That means a great deal to everyone here, and not just because Phronie Fisher lives here. The only thing I would add is to emphasise, as Rushta brought your attention to our website called Participate Melbourne. You can find it by just Googling Participate Melbourne, and click your way through to the page about Parkville, and that is where you can find more information that is not going to be static but updated over time, and where you can interact with local government specifically about your area, your needs, your feedback and your interests. So Participate Melbourne is where you need to go, and we always look forward to hearing from you. Thank you. I'm happy to second this motion, and thank you all for being here tonight.
Terrific. So I'm asking councillors, is there anybody else that would like to speak to this motion this evening? No, then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. I'm now calling on our Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Nicholas Rees, who's going to assume the role of Chair for this, the remainder of this meeting. It's not actually, are you doing the next few items? And then Councillor Leppett's going to take over, but you in your role as Chair of the Planning Portfolio. Thanks. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor, and thank you for those wonderful words about Parkville as well. There are five reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. The first of those is Agenda Item 6.2, Planning Application TP-2021-110 for the property 95 to 101 Powlett Street, East Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this item? We know there's been a lot of community interest about it, so I think we will request that. So, Nick McLennan, who is a manager of statutory planning, please make your way to the lectern. We look forward to your presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. The proposal before you tonight seeks a permit for the use of the land as a residential hotel, partial demolition, buildings and works associated with the extension of a multi-storey residential building, external alterations, construction of a fence and painting. Next slide, please. Here we have some photographs of the subject site. To your top left, we see the subject site located on the west side of Powlett Street, bounded by Von Gerard Place to the north and Magnolia Place to the south. The subject site is approximately 927 square metres in size and is occupied by the former Magnolia Court Boutique Hotel. Properties to the north and west front Gibbs Street, and a row of terraces to the south front Powlett Street. To the top right, you'll notice a photo of a Honda 1989 Honda Legend out the front. That's taken in circa 1995 and shows the an earlier design of the hotel and its relationship with the Victorian two-storey building. To the bottom left is a photo of an original two-storey Victorian building. As you can see, it's partially obscured by foliage, but it's a contributory building. And to the north of that, you can partially also see the single Victorian bay building. And that photograph was taken from the website of the hotel. Finally, at the bottom right, we have a photo of the three-storey addition, which is to the south of the Victorian building, which was constructed in circa 1960, taken from Magnolia Place. Next slide, please. Here we have the existing site plan, highlighting existing setbacks and trees on the subject site. The existing building on the site consisted of a 26-room residential hotel and an associated restaurant. Next slide, please. Here we have a three-dimensional demolition plan highlighting proposed demolition associated with the application, the demolition of the latter three-storey addition to the south, retention of the existing two-storey Victorian-era building and the associated one-storey building to the north, and demolition of the built form to the rear of these structures. Next slide. Here we have the proposed ground floor, which includes a new lobby for the hotel, new front fence, restaurant associated with the residential hotel, with seating provided within the front terrace area. The built form is proposed to extend around the retained heritage buildings and provides for 10 lodging rooms at ground level. Car parking for four on-site spaces, within a car stacker system are proposed to be accessed from Magnolia Place. Car parking has been identified as being available for guests through a booking system and staff as necessary. In regard to the use of the site, the applicant has applied for the use as a residential hotel with an ancillary restaurant. There's proposed to be 37 rooms. The restaurant is proposed to operate between the hours of Monday to Sunday indoor from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. and outdoors Monday to Sunday, including the second storey terrace from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. No liquor licence has been sought as part of this application. Next slide, please. Here we have the proposed first floor. This includes the restaurant, as you can see toward the north and in the yellow there on the site and the terrace, as well as 13 lodging rooms. The first floor wraps around the retained heritage buildings. The rear western boundary setback ranges from 2 metres to 2.22 metres. It is constructed to the northern boundary and is set back 1.78 from the southern boundary along Magnolia Place. Next slide, please. The second floor slide shows the proposed proposal also wraps around the retained heritage buildings. The rear western boundary setback ranges from 2 metres to 3.82 metres. It's again constructed to the northern boundary and is set back 1.78 metres from the southern boundary. This level contains 14 lodging rooms. Next slide, please. Here we have the proposed Powlett Street and Magnolia elevations. You'll note on the proposed Powlett Street, there's various restoration works are identified to the retained Victorian buildings fronting Powlett Street. And the final slide, councillors, is a proposed render of the development. And that's it.
Thank you for that, Nick. Are there any questions for Nick, Lord Mayor?
Nick, hi. Can you just tell us the current parking on the site versus the four parks that will be allowed in the stacker?
Yes, so there's informal parking for around 8 car spaces currently on the site.
Thanks.
Thank you for that, Nick. Any other questions for Nick? All right. Please go back to your seat. We might have you on standby, though, if any further questions arise through the presentations, but thank you very much for that. I now call on Sally Shepherd, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. A reminder, Sally, to please keep your presentation to 3 minutes.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll do my best and I'm sure I'll be reminded. So a high-level review of the recommendation that's before the council tonight suggests that it's a pretty simple proposition. We've got an existing residential hotel in existing commercial premises being replaced by a new residential hotel with some additional ancillary use, and there's plenty of ways of dealing with any problems that might arise through conditions. We say that's a very simplistic look at what's a very big proposal. And what's big about it is that we now have for the first time a 130-seat restaurant in a completely residential area, and in discussions with the applicant tonight, they've confirmed what we had assumed, which was a liquor licence is an integral and necessary part of the business plan to make this proposition viable, but there is no liquor licence application before you this evening. So a lot of the things that the council might be interested in terms of how the liquor licence would operate and how that would affect residential amenity, even though it's integral to what we're going to get if this proposal goes ahead, isn't here. So first problem. The second thing is to say that a new 130-seat restaurant is an ancillary use seems to me to be a stretch of the English language. What we had before was a bed and breakfast with a breakfast room. It served people who stayed in the bed and breakfast. It was not open for lunch or dinner. This is a whole new ballgame. And the approach that council, the recommendation before the council seems to be pretty high level in terms of what that very large new development is. The Melbourne planning scheme is pretty clear. It says that if you're going to put this sort of development in the middle of a residential area, you need to look at the importance of maintaining residential amenity. You look at things like you only facilitate non-residential uses in residential areas where they're compatible with residential character and amenity and serve the needs of the local community. And that the council would discourage new non-residential uses that have a negative impact on residential amenity. The need for those positive impacts on the residential area that this is going to be put in the middle of haven't been addressed. It's that it won't be negative, but we would say that under the planning scheme that's not enough. The other issue that we have raised with all of the councillors individually, I think, is that we live next door to the stacker. It's literally outside our bedroom window. Acoustic consultant says that they don't think that the stacker can comply with the noise protocol, so we're looking at a completely unworkable parking solution as well as the reduction that the Lord Mayor's indicated. Finally, this development seems to be dealt with differently by Council to other developments of a similar type. Council has in consideration at the moment a planning permit application in Domain Road, South Yarra for a residential hotel. That applicant has been asked to do things like dimension the height of a proposed roof plant and details of any proposed plant screening measures for noise. This applicant hasn't been asked that. That applicant's being asked to provide a detailed response to the objectives, policies, application requirements of the following clauses of the Melbourne Planning Scheme, in particular where a proposal may not align with the objectives and policies of the particular clauses, and the council officer has referred to clause 22.14 and 22.22. This stuff, those sort of considerations are being left in this case to conditions that hopefully will deal with those matters, but we don't know. We've just got to take it on trust if council approves it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Sally. And in the interests of time this evening, I've certainly been noting your the issues you've raised. I know the officers are as well. And what we'll do is, I think when we get through the submissions, we'll then turn and systematically go through the matters that are being raised. I now call on Tony Watson to address councillors, and please speak for no more than 3 minutes. Tony.
Shall do. Sorry. Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors, for the opportunity to speak. My wife Tracy and I, we're newbies to East Melbourne in one sense. We've been there 2 years. And the real theme that I feel I can add to tonight's discussion is what it feels to be as a new resident who left leafy East Melbourne to come into beautiful, sorry, leafy Hawthorne to come into lovely East Melbourne.
It was a great move, Tony.
Yes, thank you. We live directly opposite the proposed development in Powlett Street in Canterbury Terrace, and our bedroom looks straight across at it, and we will hear it, obviously. Obviously, as was said, what's been the past, an accommodation with a breakfast service which never had a liquor licence, is now proposed to be a large-scale restaurant with a beer garden. My key contention is that all should ever be allowed, or reasonably allowed, to anyone there is to operate a similar small-scale bed and breakfast accommodation. People like us who've bought and come to the suburb have a reasonable expectation that uses and amenity that have been in place in the area for many decades will remain. I mean, we've spent our life savings to come and buy the home. We're very proud of it. I don't think we or any of the other residents in the area could reasonably have expected anything like that to ever come along with a deleterious impact on our homes, our amenity. I think people who own a property, perhaps on Wellington Parade or Victoria Parade, maybe could reasonably expect that one day something like this might come along, but not in the heart of the suburb, where the finest and most significant homes are seen. I mean, the liquor store that's been there 120 years, I think we bought in knowing that there's a liquor store there. We know the MCG's at the end of the street. We know on game night it's going to be busy, but we never expected that 7 days a week, whatever that was, 12 till 11 at night, there's going to be people outside smoking, charge hiking. So I don't think we could reasonably expect that. To echo the point that was just made, the proposed development I can't see offers anything of utility to us or any other resident in the area. It's obviously for out-of-town people to come there. I can't see anyone else getting anything out of it. And I would suggest that what I perceive as likely is to be significant neighbourhood residential and business owner conflict arising out of it, endless reports and complaints to council and police. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tony. I now call on Greg Bissonella, who is the Heritage and Planning Convener for the East Melbourne Group. Welcome back to Town Hall in the community, Greg.
Councillors, good evening to you all. And thanks to Rob and his team at the Parkville Residents Association for hosting us as well. I would also like to acknowledge that I'm joined here by a contingent of East Melbourne Group members, residents, and my counterpart, the Vice President of the East Melbourne Historical Society, Barbara Patterson. Councillors, we'd love to invite you to join us at a local hotel in Parkville for an outdoor meal and drink after this meeting. However, none exists. And the salient point is, nor should there be along the Avenue or Royal Parade or in the residential streets of East Melbourne. Councillors, you've received our written submission, and we'd like to highlight a few key aspects of the application that we are advised by three experts in the areas of urban design, heritage and acoustics, does not comply with the Melbourne planning scheme and associated overlays, and renders the application as it stands and contrary to Council's delegates' report, unlawful and unworkable. This is a problematic application that requires considerable changes to ensure a more sympathetic and respectful development is achieved for the site. One that harmoniously coexists within the significant heritage streetscape of Powlett Street, with its multiple significant 19th century heritage buildings that form part of the neighbourhood residential zone. And it is this zoning that specifically states that development applications must be very carefully balanced and restrained, so as not to impact residential amenity through noise from its operation, traffic, and also respects local heritage under the heritage overlay, which it is also governed. and the Neighbourhood Residential Zone Clause 22.15 clearly states that you should discourage new non-residential users that have a negative impact on residential amenity, that do not provide a net benefit to local residents and the local community, and that would be more appropriately located within mixed use or commercial zones. The information that we have provided you in our submission from our urban design, Felicity Brown, heritage consultant Trevor Westmore, and acoustics firm Marshall Day, advocate a smaller built form outcome with limited restaurant facilities, a more detailed heritage analysis, and a complete reworking of the Karstdecker to comply with noise regulations. So let's be clear here. The previous 24-room boutique bed and breakfast known as Magnolia Court was a subdued hotel that, while somewhat incongruent with the area, managed to coexist with the residential properties that adjoined and catered exclusively for its small number of guests only. What we are advised is that this application is an overextension of that use. In the almost 70 years of the existence of the East Melbourne Group, we have never seen an application for such an expansive restaurant and bar offering in a residential street of East Melbourne. We trust that you agree and reject the recommendation before you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I'll now call on Ian Mitchell, who requested this opportunity to speak with us this evening. Welcome back to a future Melbourne committee meeting, Ian. A reminder to please keep your comments to 3 minutes.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors, as president of the East Melbourne Group with over 500 residents, I have personal experience of liquor licence applications in East Melbourne over 16 years. The proposed licence is inappropriate in the residential area. It will result in noise during usage and arriving and departing patrons up to 11 p.m. and beyond. Council planning have underestimated the proposed intensification of usage. With no existing use rights for a liquor licence, this is an application for a brand new hotel with a 128-seat licensed restaurant and beer garden. This will be a watering hole for patrons en route to and from the MCG and other sporting precincts. We're not against liquor licences on the periphery of East Melbourne, such as Wellington Parade. However, it's totally inappropriate in the middle of the residential area. This also sets a terrible precedent for other potential cafes and premises to morph into bars. EMG, the East Melbourne Group, developed a policy of not supporting liquor licences inside the residential area. I emphasise inside. This consistent policy has widespread support in the community and has been effective in maintaining amenity and ambience. Council has absolutely supported this policy and rejected 4 other applications within the residential area. Please do not reverse your position and ruin our suburb. For a 37-room hotel with a 128-seat restaurant and staff, parking for only 4 cars and in a noisy stacker, it's totally inadequate. It's also a reduction from the 7, or I heard before, 8 current parks. It will seriously impact on residential amenity. 1-hour parking limits will constantly be exceeded, and council has shown that they don't have the resources to enforce this. The beer garden hours till 8 p.m. are proposed to get approval tonight. In time, later hours will be applied for. The site is in one of the finest heritage streetscapes in Melbourne, if not Australia. The proposed contemporary building is unsympathetic to its surrounds and makes an inappropriate modern contradiction. It should not be allowed. A well-known ploy of developers is to propose developments way beyond the regulations. Council then pushes back and suggests it's achieved compromises. Since Council indicated the proposal was unsuitable, the reductions have been marginal and hours can be easily re-extended. If the matter goes to VCAT, as it surely will, we propose to call experts, expert evidence to support what we say, as Greg has already mentioned. Councillors, with 95 objections, this has been called into Future Melbourne. It's clearly open to councillors to reject this application as an inappropriate overdevelopment with massive impact. We ask you to reject this application.
Right, thank you very much for that presentation. Ian, any questions for Ian? No. Thanks, Ian. So look, we're about to hear some submissions from the proponents, and I think some of the issues that have been raised in the submission so far, I'll flag in advance, so I will be directing to them. But there are a couple of planning related matters which have been raised, which I wouldn't mind directing to our officers, and invite other councillors who wish to raise anything that's been raised to do the same. But Nick, are these questions best directed to you or Margie, Julian?
Okay, direct me. Yes, to me.
So look, there's a couple of things I'd specifically like a response to, but I'd invite you to respond to any other issues which you heard which you think require a response. The first one was just around which we heard from Sally and Ian, was around the stacker and the acoustic report, and there seems to be some contention about the noise levels and the amenity that flows from that, so I'm keen to get your response on that. We heard from Tony, Greg, everybody really at this point about the liquor licence and the fact that we're considering an application on seating and patronage in a restaurant, and then a subsequent application may come for a liquor licence and potential planning issues that presents. We also heard that the conditions that are being applied here are different to the conditions which are being proposed on other similar applications across the City of Melbourne, and South Yarra was referenced there. We also heard from Greg that this is a neighbourhood residential zone, and that there's a different set of, a set of considerations that require us to discourage any development that would impact negatively on residential amenity. And this particular application is something we would more likely accept in a mixed use zone. So the proposal here isn't consistent with the neighbourhood residential zone. And then we also heard about some issues which may arise with street parking, given that there are a reduction from 8 car parking spots from the previous Magnolia Court to this new proposal with 4, and with a proposed 128-seat restaurant, that there will be parking and street parking issues of which the City of Melbourne will struggle to enforce. So, can you respond to those, please? And any other matters that you feel necessary to respond to?
Certainly. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll begin with the car stacker, which is the first one you've listed there. So unfortunately, there are no planning controls surrounding the noise generated from car parking stackers per se. It's their location that is relevant mostly. Notwithstanding this, Condition 17E requires the noise generated by the car stacker to be tested appropriately by an acoustic engineer. If found to be unacceptable, then we would need to review the location, the present, and any other future or potential mitigation to help with that, to ensure it does comply with Australian standards. The second question you had was in regard to the liquor licence. Put simply, there's no liquor licence application before, so we can't consider it here. Should a liquor licence application be made in the future, then a planning permit would be required. It would be required to consider it on its merit. Moving to the NRZ and different considerations in terms of having a use within a residential zone. As per the planning officer report, officers have considered this in great detail and haven't taken lightly the proposal before us. Regard has been given to the relevant policies, and conditions have been incorporated which we say are enforceable and will ensure that the amenity impacts by the proposal will be sufficiently dealt with. And if there were ongoing problems, then there would be options available to council to take enforcement action. In terms of the car parking impact, the car parking on the street within the immediate area is restricted. Our traffic engineers have reviewed the proposal, and the traffic engineers have concurred with planning officers that they believe that the car parking impact, and based on the traffic report prepared by the applicant, will not increase or impact unreasonably the area. And that's having regard to the restrictions that are in place, and so we have to take them on face value. I think the last one Margie's going to take.
Thank you. So in relation to the last matter, it was just raised that there is another
hotel use application, which is also in a residential zone. And there was just queries around whether the same set of considerations and assessment are being undertaken. I can confirm that it is the same assessment. So, and it is, that application is at request for further information stage. So it's at its early stage. No decision has been made on that application. This application, some of those matters were outstanding, and that's why they are contained as conditions on permit, but they would need to be resolved before the plans can be endorsed. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for those responses. I will now call on Jason Barnfather from Square Peg, who requested the opportunity to speak with us this evening. Please address us for no more than 3 minutes, Jason.
Thank you, Councillor. Tonight we're obviously looking for your support for the proposal as recommended by the Planning Department. We are working with an existing hotel on the site. We obviously do appreciate the significance of the area. We've gone through a very rigorous process. This has been over a year in planning. We've made multiple amendments through the course through consultation with the Council Planning Department, also the Heritage Advisor, and feedback through referrals and also through the objections that have come in. What you've noticed is obviously there's been changes to improve the presentation with respect to, say, the how it looks from the street. We've narrowed down the addition to the side to open up the frontage and reinstate the full veranda. We've reduced patron numbers in response to feedback from the community. Obviously, I can hear, you know, that everyone thinks it's too many. Obviously, we have done our assessments. We've gone through and got acoustic engineers, traffic engineers, who all believe it's appropriate, and so do the Council Planning Department with the numbers that are purported. We are obviously looking to create a business that will be viable. So the primary focus is to accommodate the 37 hotel rooms. We do have 4 car spaces, which has obviously been raised, which is a reduction from the nominal 8 that sort of 7 or 8 that are on the site. That's based on the data we've received. They did 1 mile grid were the traffic engineers for this particular one. They used data from Traffics Group, which is another reputable firm, which did study of the Olsen in South Yarra. And they've used that empirical data to formulate the requirement for the car parking demand. In terms of there are, like, obviously the short-term parking for drop-off and pick-up, I think it's 15 minutes in front. And then if there is someone that wants to park for a longer term, they can either use the book in one of the car stack spaces, or alternatively, there's some parking in Grey Street and at Tribeca where you can go and pay for some commercial parking. The other alternative is if someone does have a car and wants to drive in, they may stay somewhere else if there's can't get a car near this, a space near this site. In terms of the car stacker itself, it is an enclosed unit. It's in a garage. Car parking stackers are very common these days. Many residential properties have them. This is 4 cars in a double stacker. There's nothing to suggest that nothing in our data that says that we can't provide it. We have an acoustic engineer. I rang today specifically because I was aware of an issue of the car stacker. He said, I don't think there's an issue with it. You can put an acoustically treated door. It's enclosed with mostly concrete around it anyway, so that we don't see why there would be an issue. So, look, we're looking for, as I said, we're looking for your support tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions. You know, we think it's appropriate for the setting. We are starting, our starting point may be different to that other application. We do have an existing hotel on the site, which could operate tomorrow, you know, continue to operate with, we're obviously trying to upgrade it and enhance it and offer, obviously, some of the restaurant component that not only facilitates, caters for the people on site, but also the some of the community to come in as well. So thank you.
Thanks for presenting to us this evening, Jason. Let me know if you're the best person to ask this question to. I'm keen to hear about what your, and I think everybody's keen to hear what your vision is for this development. Is that,
I'm a town planner, so that it's probably Luke. Luke's the owner, one of the owners, and he's here just to literally answer that about the operational side. So myself, town planning, I've got Chris here about the architecture, because he's the architect, and then Luke.
Thank you for addressing those town planning matters this evening. We'll now call on Chris Stribley from Sarah Stribley to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thanks so much for your time. I'll probably keep it pretty brief, as a lot of the questions seem to be more about use. In regards to the architecture, we've had a lot of consultation with both Council's Heritage Advisors as well as our own private advisors. The primary aim of this building has been to amplify the existing heritage building on the site. The existing form is no greater than what's there on site. We've concentrated any additional rooms to the rear of the site, so the visual bulk remains the same at the site. The fenestrations on the front are designed to not copy, but reflect and talk to the existing streetscape in the area, which you can see slightly on the left in the elevations if we go back. And the primary changes, we have actually reduced that mass on the ground floor to really bring through the existing double balconies and amplify that building at the front. The courtyard's also being proposed to be open up so that we can all enjoy what was the heritage building visually.
Right, thanks, Chris. Any questions for Chris? No, in that case, I will call on Luke Peary from Primeland to address us this evening. Thank you very much, Luke.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors. Thanks very much for allowing me to speak today. I thought it was really important that I was here to present our point from how we actually acquired the property, where it was before, where it's heading in the future, and hopefully answering a few of those vision questions that you were asking before. So the property came to us about 18 months ago. John, who's an East Melbourne resident, owned it for several years. It was in really bad shape. It was operating as a pretty rundown, low average daily rate hotel that had some pretty suspect characters coming through it. John basically said to me at that point, he said, look, I'm having a few issues with it. We have hit COVID. The operator had walked out on us. I'm too old to obviously undertake a refurbishment on it. I can't sell it in this market, and I need someone to come and basically look after the property and give it its new future. So we went and we did significant due diligence on the property, and as a lot of you guys will know, and you know, we really respect the area, we love the area. It's a very contentious precinct. It's got a lot of heritage with it. The property itself has had a really strong history. It's been operating as the hotel for the last X amount of years, and we believe that we've put in a proposal that's actually respected where it's gone in its history and given it a new lease on life. So without refurbishing it, getting it back to an operational point of view, we didn't think that it would take some improvements. It would take some increasing with whether it was the room size, increasing the restaurant size for the guests, and ultimately giving everyone around a better experience for it. Now, with that, as Jason mentioned before, we've worked with council and the council officers for the last 12 months, and there are very few projects in your life, whether it be owner, developer, builder, that you can walk through and you're really proud of. So we took advice, whether acoustic, heritage, with the objections that came through, we reduced the numbers from outdoor dining, indoor dining. I mean, whether it was hours that were people coming and going from the restaurant. And we ended up with a result where we thought it was going to not negatively impact the surrounding residents as much as what was actually currently there. And with these types of properties, they can sit there for 10, 20 years, being vacant, abandoned, and not obviously offering that amenity that we're looking to provide to the residents and obviously to all the guests as well. So, look, it's something that we're really proud of. It's something that we hope that guests who come here, not from just East Melbourne, but from all around the city, can have a really unique experience. And I think, you know, we heard just briefly on the restaurant and some of the queries and worries around that. Look, we've I'll wrap up really quickly here. We originally had it 148 seats. This is going from what was a $70 a night hotel to what we're pitching to be a $350 to $450 a night hotel. The fine dining restaurant that we're having is, I heard beer garden before was a word that was thrown around. It's nothing like that. This will be fine dining. It will be majority inside for the restaurant guests. And if they've got friends, family, and hopefully, you know, residents that want to drop in and have a coffee. So, look, like I said, we're really proud of it. Thanks a lot for your time, and I hope that's addressed a few of the issues.
Thank you very much, Luke. Please remain there if you can. So I am keen to just hear a little bit more about your vision for Magnolia Court. You've, like all of us, heard from the neighbours, your neighbours, the community you're going to have to live and operate a business within and amongst. There's a very strong flavour coming through of concern that this won't be a sort of small boutique hotel, or it won't be a B&B in the flavour of Magnolia Court, which operated there for decades, but which you rightly did identify had sort of was past its best, shall I say. So tell us what's your vision for the site? Will it be a place where people will drop in on their way to their football? Will it be a beer garden or a place of mass gathering before major events in the city? What's your vision?
I think it's a really good question you asked, and it's one that we actually had to assess ourselves when we did our due diligence on the site. Where is the property at now? Who are going to be the clientele, both guests, restaurant users and the like? Our vision and the vision that we have for the whole site is this is going to be one of, if not the finest, boutique hotel within the inner city. We want the patrons to come in and have an experience that they can't get anywhere else, whether it's South Yarra, North Melbourne, any other East Richmond, any other area. I think the courtyard and the restaurant on paper, it sounds a lot different to what the vision is in real life. So, you know, you can look at the hours and the operation and you can think, oh, wow, you know, as mentioned before, we're going to have people dropping in from the football, drinking beers, getting taxis, yelling, having cigarettes out there till 12 a.m., 1 o'clock in the morning. The actual reality of this is we will be having this restaurant. It will be not for that type of crowd, if that makes sense. It will be for really the restaurant guests. We're hoping as well that a lot of the people who are here today can drop in for a coffee in the morning. There isn't an offering like that in the surrounding streets at the moment. Pop in, get a takeaway coffee, potentially see and greet other guests that are around them. But the majority of the fear will just be, like I said, for the guests, people who come in. They're probably going to be, like I said, having, if the vision sort of can elaborate, sort of fine dining, 4 or 5 course meals. Coming in, the majority of it will be inside, and that's really the vision from where the restaurant stands. I don't know, like I said, if on paper you can really appreciate that, but once you've sort of, it came up before when we were talking outside having a coffee, what the interior is and what it's all going to be, and that the actual hotel itself has a really interesting and rich history. We've worked closely with Chris and the team on exploring that history, and it used to house a lot of the arts performers and a lot of the artistic community of Melbourne. So we're really going to build upon that for the interiors and the scheme and have that whole enrichment of the history to live through the interiors of it as well. So I hope that gives you a bit more idea on the vision and what we're planning. And like I said, we don't really see it as something that will disrupt the residences, what it may look like on paper.
All right. Thank you, Luke. Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, and thank you, Luke. You've spoken a lot about fine dining and takeaway coffees. I just want to drill down on this to understand the food and beverage offering. Is it confined to those two things, or will people be able to come to the venue for just drinks and, you know, sort of mingling outside in larger groups? Is it confined to those two?
Confined is really hard to sort of lock down, but I think it really will be confined to, like I said, sit-down meals, if that makes sense. People in the morning, that morning traffic will come through, which will probably, I would imagine, stop at around 11 or 12 o'clock. And that will just be, like I said, coffees, takeaway, croissants, etc., etc. And then where our envision is, the lunch crowd will not be as popular as what we would see the fine dining or the lunching and afternoon into the night be inside. So I think what we've done as well, we've worked really closely with council. We've got, I think right now, we've come down from 148 to 128 guests. 90 of them are inside. So, you know, this can all be monitored and regulated from, obviously, those who are looking after this area. So, you know, those 30 or 38 guests, for example, aren't really the crowd that you can imagine coming through and going to the football that are going to cause that much issue, I would think, for the residents.
Councillor
Lippitt. Thank you. It's a fine dining restaurant. Where will your customers park?
Really good question again. So Like we've seen, we had actually originally in the plan had a basement as part of it. We spoke with a lot of the traffic engineers, acoustic as well. So we see a lot of the actual crowd being from the hotel itself, and that will be the guests.
What proportion do you think?
That's a really good question. So I think we've now got 90 guests on the inside of the hotel. Melbourne, the majority of that will have to be inside the majority of the year. There's 76 guests at 100% occupancy, which leaves another 16 or 14 or so that will make up the 90. Proportionately, it's hard to put my finger on right now, but if I had to pick a number, probably about 70% I think will be hotel guests. And where we envisioned with their guest parking, we look at it very similar with the location. You're 2 minutes out of the city with a beautiful walk through. You're close to the MCG, the parks, hotels, a lot of hospital stays. We're actually seeing will be a lot of our clientele as well. And our view is those people who are coming, and whether they're staying in the CBD or this close to it, a lot of them aren't coming to actually drive around. So, I mean, it's very hard in CBD hotels significantly as well to have the amount of car parking that they need for those customers, but they deal with having all of the transport, amenity and surrounding
areas.
So
will the car stacker be for hotel guests or restaurant guests or staff or a combination of the three?
A combination of the three. So it will majority be for hotel and restaurant staff.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. Thank you, Luke, for addressing us. Oh, sorry, Lord Mayor.
I had one, although it may be for somebody else, which was about the feedback on the traffic management from the experts. And having looked at, I think you said it was the Olsen in South Yarra, and what were some of the details about why, excuse me, they didn't envisage issues when there are restricted parking, whether it's resident 1 hour, etc. Could you give us some detail, on why that is the case?
I'm not the traffic engineer, sorry, just Jason. So I have I have a fair understanding of it because I have read their stuff. Basically, they did a study. There was a study done of the Olsen, which is obviously an inner hotel as well. They found that the majority of people would turn up through alternative means, i.e. public transport, Uber, taxi, etc., because they're going into the inner urban sort of area. When they did that, so this was an actual study, they stood out the front. It turned out there was like a rate of like 0.017 cars, you know, per patron or something, which equated a very, very modest number, which is expected to, or translated to this proposal. So that the data that we have suggests there's only the need for like 3 or 4 car parks on the site. And where there is any further demand, there are other commercial car parks available. We've also got, when I looked at their website today for the Olsen as well, they also do flag the fact that they've got limited parking and you need to book them. So yeah, that would also influence who comes to the site. So we're not expecting people who need a car park necessarily to come to this site. You know, they have other options available in the area. So we're looking for those people that come in on the train or etc. For that. But in terms of the Olsen, yeah, that's the real life experience on the model, which is in the data here, and it says that there's very extremely low demand. So.
All right, thank you for that, Jason. Councillor Hakim, did you have a question for Jason or for another one of our
I did have speakers? One for Jason, if you don't mind. Sorry, Jason. And then I did have another question for Luke as well. Just if I can, around coming back to the parking, the turning circle seems to, with a car stacker seems to be very tight. I know I've got a slightly bigger car and would... I think I might scratch my car as I'm coming through. Have you considered how that would work with parking with guests? And is there an issue there, or
I think as Lou suggested, there are swept path diagrams produced based on by one mile grid. They're based on the B85 vehicle, which is the standard vehicle. The operational side is the majority of the time these will be for staff unless they're booked in advance. There is the option, which we did discuss, whether they're valet parked or not, in the event that someone didn't want to park in a stacker, for example. So the traffic engineers say that it's fine. I look at that, I don't see a real issue with the diagrams. it's, I suppose, it's pretty common practice these days for car stackers. So.
Thank you. So I think, I guess what I'm looking for is assurance for the residents that we won't be knocking about with their,
well,
the walls on their
side. Yeah, well, the diagrams do account for clearances. Yep. So it assumes it's a normal manoeuvre. It's at the end. It's a 90-degree turn, so it's not a big deal. It's not a complex manoeuvre where you have to S-bend through, et cetera, which I've seen. This is fairly standard arrangement. So,
thank you. Thanks, Jason. If I can, Luke, ask one question. You've heard from residents there's a fear of creep for operating hours. What do you kind of say to that?
In terms of this being increased sort of after this, we assessed this when we originally had the objections. The operating hours inside were originally from 11:30, and we pushed that down to 11 p.m. Similarly, outside was 11 p.m. We pushed that down to 8 p.m. And we discussed sort of as a team as well. We looked at realistically with the offering that we're making, are we going to be applying for anything later? From effectively where we're at right now until October, it's basically, or maybe September, it's really hard to eat outside or drink outside anywhere in Melbourne. So that 8 p.m, which is what we discussed, and we went through that in pretty strong detail, because we originally said, 11 p.m. down to 8, and we were going to say, do we want to push back at 10, 9, 8:30? But we looked at it and then said, no. The offering that we're doing, we're really happy with the hours that we've put forth right now. We put actually a lot of thinking and detail into it. Similarly, with the inside as well, we assessed what the offering was going to be. It's not going to be a late night drinking, boozy restaurant. It's going to be a fine dining, and majority of them will have set times for eating. And we've anticipated that the opening hours aren't going to need to be exceeded beyond what they are right now. So from our point of view in terms of operational, we're really comfortable with where they're at and don't see any need to increase them.
Thank you. Lord Mayor, I believe you've got a question, then Councillor Leilu after that.
Mine was more, I think, might be for Nick. I think, Ian, you mentioned the fact that why are we saying yes to this? Sorry, Luke. When we've refused for previous applications that were similar. I was interested in your thoughts on that and why this is different to those. Yep.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I believe he was referring to liquor licence applications, and this isn't a liquor licence application. I might be wrong.
Can you just explain how that's going to work? Because you're going for a certain footprint and operational model now, but you haven't actually applied for the liquor licence. So how does that all come together?
Do you want to go to the lectern, Jason, so that everyone in the room can hear you?
Yes. Look, this obviously is, there's been some movement on hours and operations, intensity, and actually we want to get, we're obviously looking to get our permit to develop the land and then develop the operation as the restaurant and which time a liquor licence will be applied for. So we haven't decided what type of licence, etc., but bringing it down to 11 p.m. falls within the restaurant hours for a liquor licence, so it will be applied for, and we think it's appropriate, fundamentally. So
Nick, I think it was Ian who made the point about four similar applications being in the area being rejected. You're saying they were applications for liquor licensing.
Okay. Yes, I think that's correct, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Sure. Evan, Council.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor, and through you as Chair. Just to clarify that point, there's two separate considerations that Council has to make here. One is around the nature of the operation for the land use and hours, which is what's being considered tonight. The other is for associated hours with the service of liquor on the site. And that is not being considered here. I understand from the team that historically there has been applications to extend the previous operation on the site, excuse me, in relation to the service of liquor. So the hours for service of liquor don't have to align with the hours of operation for a restaurant itself. So a restaurant can close at 11 p.m, but service of liquor may only be allowed up to 9 p.m. at night, as an example.
So the applicant's taking the risk about operations vis-a-vis liquor licence?
that may be will be applied for and may or may not be granted, right?
All right. Councillor Leilu, and then Councillor Ball, and then Councillor Campbell. I'm sorry, I can see hands going up in the audience. There's just not capacity for further submission.
So question around valet parking, I'm not sure who can answer that, but you mentioned briefly about valet parking. So will you have valet parking as part of this operation or something where somebody will be able to, if somebody turned up with a car or something and, you know, they don't know, you know, you don't have no room, will there be someone like a valet parking who will take it to the right spot or there's no service like that as a valet parking? Yeah, if you can, please.
As I suggest, we're discussing whether, it, like, for example, the person that doesn't want to park the car in there. Remember, there are only four car spaces, so we've got, and there's, so it is a booking system, so people will be made aware what's available and if it is available at the time of booking. So that if somebody does turn up and doesn't want, yes, it'll be valet parked for them and then put out on the street in the short-term parking afterwards. So we're only talking, you know, because of the limited number of car parks, we're not expecting that to occur very often. So.
And so it'll be on the street or they'll be going to, like, you know, one of the commercial, you know,
if someone turned up with a vehicle and there was no space available, they'd be directed to the commercial car parks if they wanted to park on the turn. They're just in Grey Street around the corner. Okay. You know, that's so the closest one.
You would direct them to park it, but not the valet parking?
Oh, we wouldn't. No, we wouldn't take in their car around to the commercial car park, for example. So.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you, Councillor Liu. Councillor Ball.
Thank you. I have a question, I think, for Nick about just about process. When the liquor licence has been, as has been foreshadowed, is applied for and it's assessed on its own merits with no bearing as to this decision made tonight, is that correct?
through you, Chair. So I might provide a little bit of context about the two separate processes that are applicable for these kinds of applications. So the application tonight is for use only, so considerations of the hotel use and the ancillary restaurant. There are different kinds of liquor licence applications. Some require a planning permit, some are just applications through the VC. Sorry, no, it's now called the VGCCC. So whether it's either a planning application that will need to be sought or whether it's just an application through the VGCCC, Council's comments are sought on both of those different kinds of applications. So we will be referred either the VGCCC application and we are able to consider amenity impacts of the liquor licensing. So, for example, we could require that the hours are even less than what is proposed in this application or that it's inappropriate in itself in a neighbourhood residential zone. So we are open to still making those assessments either through an amendment to this application to introduce liquor licensing, so if it needed a permit, or alternatively, if it doesn't need a planning permit and it's through VGCCC, we're still open to assessing amenity impacts. And we are not, it's not a predetermination that we're saying a hotel is appropriate and an outdoor use is appropriate and therefore it follows that liquor is okay. We haven't turned our minds to that and we would need to do that through either of those processes.
Thank you for that, Margie. That's a very important contribution. Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. My question's to Justin Hanney, who may refer it to the appropriate officer. We've heard concern from residents that people may arrive in cars and then park on the street and overstay whatever the time limits are on that street and that the City of Melbourne does not have adequate resources to enforce anyone who does overstay. So I'd be grateful for a response from you about the capacity for the City of Melbourne to meet that enforcement requirement.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Through you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Look, we have a very strong on-street compliance and enforcement team and we direct those in particular if there are issues and that they are pressing issues, that we know that someone's, you know, that there's regular people overstaying in a certain area or we've got certain behaviours in areas, then we do focus in, but there are regular control patrols right across the whole of the city. But there are great examples and we can give you some of those just in the last few weeks around Lygon Street is one example where we've really concentrated efforts to try and change behaviours in an area. So I don't have concerns, Councillor Campbell, with this having resources on the ground to enforce.
Thank you.
All right. If there aren't any further questions, then I'm going to move a motion, and it is an amended motion to that which has been drafted by officers. So I'll ask that that now be brought up onto the screen so that we can check that. Just pause it there, please. So there's additional clause around parking and then additional clause on patrons. All right, so I'm going to move that motion that's now on the screen. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I'll now speak to this motion. So I think we'd all agree that East Melbourne is a truly remarkable suburb, not just in the municipality of the City of Melbourne, but indeed Greater Melbourne and in Australia. I don't think there is another suburb which has as significant and extensive preserved heritage precincts as we see in East Melbourne, with that extraordinary combination of heritage buildings, heritage parks, so close to the central city and so well preserved, perhaps indeed only rivaled by Parkville in terms of that remarkable combination of factors, which makes for, as I said, a really quite extraordinary suburb. As City of Melbourne councillors, we know that it is our role to protect the things that East Melburnians love about their suburb, and we do see ourselves as the custodians of your neighbourhoods. This part of Melbourne is designated as a neighbourhood residential zone. This means that it is subject to planning controls that ensure that it remains a quiet residential character of suburb and is protected, while allowing for limited non-residential development that delivers public good. It's also the case that this application has attracted 95 objections, so in addition to all the factors I've mentioned, this is an application which I know has been very intensely scrutinised by councillors, including a number of us who have been down and walked the site as well, just to understand clearly what is being proposed here. This application does sit within a neighbourhood residential zone. It's for use. It's to use the land as a residential hotel and to demolish the existing 1950s extension. The site has been a residential hotel for several decades. However, it is important to note that tonight's application is not based on an existing use rights, which we heard in some of our submissions. It is in fact a brand new application for a brand new residential hotel, and as such our planning team have assessed the whole application on its merits. We heard submissions this evening around the heritage fabric, and indeed I can assure all submitters that there's been very extensive discussions at the city around the retention of heritage fabric, and indeed for my part I was particularly interested in the veranda, which as we saw from a photograph from 1995, where there was no veranda, it is in fact a recent addition, and it's not the City of Melbourne's role to try and protect faux or replicated heritage, but to protect genuine heritage fabric. So, look, in that regard, I think councillors can be satisfied that with this application there is no unnecessary inappropriate demolition of heritage fabric. Having said that, I do think that as is conditioned in the report, that there will need to be a conservation management plan, and in particular we are keen to see more detail about the interface between the heritage building and the new building. I will also say that And again, this goes probably against some of the submissions we've heard this evening, but I do think that Sarah Stribley, the architects, have come up with quite a sensitive, modern building that is proposed for this site. We at Council do consider a lot of applications in a heritage context, and I would say that I do think this is one of the more sensitive responses to a building, a new to a new building in a heritage area, as we would expect it to be in a suburb and an area, a neighbourhood like East Melbourne. I do appreciate that Powlett Street is a quiet residential street. I know it very well, and I do understand the need to try and protect the atmosphere, the amenity and the environment. Our planning office's advice is that a residential hotel is an appropriate use in the East Melbourne neighbourhood residential zone. The 11 new rooms that are proposed on top of the 26, which are currently there, are an expansion, but it should be noted that they do come with very considerable conditions, which I'll go through in a moment. I guess something that is probably received more attention from councillors, certainly from myself, is the restaurant, and just exactly what that's going to look like, how it's going to operate, and so while we're not considering a liquor licence tonight, we are very much considering the infrastructure, which may in future become part of a restaurant where alcohol may be served, and so it's important that we're getting the settings, I guess, right from the very start. So in that regard, the emphasis here is very much on creating a restaurant which is intended for hotel guests, and so the hours of operation, as the applicant has conceded, will be reduced from 11:30 to 11 p.m. There's a strict 8 p.m. cutter for the outdoor seating areas, and we've also dramatically reduced some of the in through conditions, things like people's ability to sit out on the balcony and so forth. There was an application for 144 patrons. Our officers have reduced that to 128, and the proposal that is going to be put to councillors in a moment reduces that further to no more than 88 patrons. And in addition to that, it contains some maximums around patrons in the front ground floor outdoor area, and on the second store entry outdoor terrace area, to really put in place very clear limits on the number of patrons, which then go, I believe, to what will be the nature, the fundamental nature of the type of operation that will be able to occur at this hotel. We've also noted the concerns that have been raised about the proposed car stacker. And Sally, if I was living next door to this venue, I would probably be here tonight, as you are, and very rightly raising your concerns. This has been tested with officers as well. There's nothing in the planning laws that give us the ability to put in place a specific sound control on a car stacker, but we have been assured that this is a car stacker which is in operation in other parts of the city, and our officers have assured us that we can be can support what's proposed here and know that it is will be respectful of local amenity. So this is a really challenging application for us to consider, but I do think with this very significant reduction in patron numbers, we're effectively reducing, cutting the number of patrons in half from what was originally proposed, together with the conditions which we're about to hear in a moment, I'm sure, from Councillor Lippitt around parking and the other long list of conditions that are in place, that this is something that councillors can support,
noting that there will be a separate application process for a liquor licence and that the council will have the opportunity to have input into that process. Councillor Lippitt.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. We've heard that this is a proxy proposal for a liquor licence. We've also heard that the matter's going to go to VCAT no matter what happens. But there's only one question before us today, and so we have to just strip all of that away and think what is the fair and reasonable outcome here. Now, at a personal level, when I first looked at this application, and as I think residents know, I've been on the site many, many times now, I believed, and still do believe actually, that what's before us is a spectacular over intensification of the site, that a car stacker system for non-permanent residents, for temporary guests, rarely if ever works, and that the facading with a new facade to juxtapose the heritage streetscape with something quite different, whilst it met the spirit of the scheme, didn't quite appeal to me personally. However, that's not the way the Melbourne planning scheme works. And we have to acknowledge that the neighbourhood residential zone has been changed a few times because it's a one-size-fits-all zone that's had built form controls hardwired into it after the event. And it's the same zone that applies across different parts of Victoria. And the place that it usually works least well is right in the heart of the city. Whether there should be the neighbourhood residential zone in East Melbourne is of course, another question, but that's not the question before us. The issue with the neighbourhood residential zone is that there are a whole lot of carve-outs for the default heights and uses, and one of those says that if you've got an existing building on the height, well, build back up to that level. If you've got existing three storeys, well, build three storeys again. And there's nothing about the built form of the proposal before us that is objectionable under the Melbourne planning scheme for those reasons. The side setbacks are fine. The retrofitting of an existing building rather than knocking it down is fine. When you look at the heritage overlay, the way that the motifs, the architectural motifs from the rest of the street have been drawn in together and flipped literally in one instance to put together something that is obviously modern in and obviously contemporary, I should say, compared to that heritage streetscape, rather than trying to do anything that mocks the heritage, is not only fine, it's exactly what the heritage policy of the City of Melbourne asks for. Now, that's, I think, the way that a tribunal member will also look at the built form as well. So I don't like it, but it is clearly clear that the job that's been done to analyse what's potentially able to be gotten out of the site from a town planning perspective has been thorough. The use is where it gets really quite difficult, as we know. And the primary use is the hotel. The ancillary use is the restaurant. As everyone has heard, there's a lot of doubt about the model, the vision for those uses. And I share that. We've proposed to greatly reduce the numbers here, which I think is absolutely fair and reasonable and consistent with the policies and the controls we've got before us. The fact of the matter is, though, that even though this is a new permit application, the applicant could have tried on an existing use argument, and we don't know what the outcome of that would have been. This is just a clearer, more transparent way of teasing out the issues, but I think it was open to the applicant to run that argument. And there has been a boutique hotel with a food offering for decades. That's the fact of the matter. This isn't a house. This is not an empty site. If it was an empty site, you wouldn't be able to build up to three stories. It's not an empty site. And so considering what is a very complicated history and the provisions of the Melbourne planning scheme, including those that weren't really designed for East Melbourne, but that's what we've got to work with, I do think the fair and reasonable thing to do is to issue a permit. I don't do that happily, but that is where we've landed. So the most important thing we can do is make sure that the conditions are also fair and reasonable, and ensure that the use going forward will be meeting the vision that's been set out today, and it won't be something undesirable. The conditions here just make it very clear to any potential guests of the hotel and any potential guests of the restaurant that you ain't got anywhere to park in the local street network, and there's got to be other ways of dealing with that. But that's what we've done in other areas, and that's fair and reasonable as well. The site's currently effectively vacant, even though the site's got the building on it. And the atrocity that is the extension to the building right now will be replaced, if this permit is acted on, with a contemporary and well thought through plan. Unpopular though it is, I do wish the applicant every success, so that this part of Powlett Street can be a neighbourly and well-loved addition, because even though it is a continuation of a use, we all understand that it's going to be a very different sort of hotel and restaurant with different sort of clientele that's been there in the past. And so I wish all residents and the applicant well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? I'm sorry, Ian, you're not able to. Correct. Correct. Correct, yeah. All right, well, with that breach of protocol, but a good question, we'll now put this motion to the vote. All those councillors in favour, please raise your hand. I'm declaring that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us is 6.3, planning application TP-2021-326 for the property 120W Toorak Road, South Yarra. Sure, I'll just pause for a moment. Those people who don't want to stick around for the remaining exciting items we've got before us. And those at the back, please feel free to come forward. Can hardly see you all the way down the back there. All right. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this item? I'm going to take that as a no. And I will now call on Billy Rabakis from Urbis, who's now making his way all the way to the front of the room. Welcome back to Future Melbourne Committee, Billy. You know the rules, please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors, and thanks to the opportunity to speak in person. It is good to be here in person after 2 years on Zoom. And look, thanks very much to council officers as well, who were very accommodating during this process. We met with the arborist, the heritage consultant and the planner numerous times on site during various lockdowns, and it was really helpful. So tonight I'm speaking to the restoration of the Goodrest Mansion, also known as 120 Toorak Road West in South Yarra. The application seeks to restore the existing Goodrest Mansion, add a contemporary addition and turn the site back into a single home. As some of you may know, the site was subject to a planning application in 2016 for a school. This was approved by VCAT, but was subject to scrutiny by residents, many who opposed the additional traffic through Leopold Street. Next slide, please. I've just listed the planning controls there on the screen. The DDOs are really of no consequence to this application, and as such, the permit is primarily for works to a heritage property and the removal of some listed trees. In terms of location, the site's located in a amazing spot opposite Faulkner Park and just south of the Botanical Gardens in a prime location in South Yarra. The site fronts Toorak Road with Leopold Street to the west, and it's a large landholding just under 2,000 square metres in size. As you can see from this aerial, there is additions that were put on the property in the 1960s when it was developed in a hotel, and you can see that it's kind of the white colour to the north of the page. It's these additions we're primarily seeking to replace. Next slide, please. So here's a picture of the building as it stands today. The house is a prime example of boom-style Italianate architecture and was constructed in 1885. The building includes a tower with sweeping views over the park towards the city and Port Phillip Bay. The 2016 application for a school accepted the demolition to the rear of the site, which this proposal is consistent with. And importantly, we have evidence that the trees, which you can just see on the right-hand side of that picture, were not original and were planted around the 1960s. Next slide, please. This is just a ground floor plan showing how we're utilising the existing two crossovers on Toorak Road, which necessitates the removal of some of the cypress trees to the bottom of that page. We've carefully retained six of the front trees so that they will continue to be red from the street, and the front garden and circular driveway will be reinstated. Next slide, please.
Bhutan pines there, yes, when you talk refer to cypresses. Okay.
Pines, yes. And they can be seen just on the top of this picture on the right-hand side. And with such a large setback to the street, we thought the landscape response was really critical. And as such, we've proposed a substantial landscape plan, which includes, as you can see, many mature trees. Whilst there were two objections noted in the officer's report, we've worked really closely with those neighbours, and they have formally withdrawn because we've kind of satisfied all their issues. So look, we really look forward to seeing the restoration of this beautiful home should a permit be issued, and like Ed Glenn from the architects Powell and Glenn to also explain the architectural response. Thank you.
Thank you very much for presenting to us, Billy. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. And now call on Ed Glenn from Powell and Glenn to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. I don't have a huge amount to add to what Billy's said today. We looked at this property for two or three people, different parties when it came up for sale, when Christchurch sold it. And we're delighted that the client who bought it, it's a client with a history of restoring old buildings, a client with a real interest in landscaping and design and gardens, which allowed us to assemble a team including Bryce Rayworth, Miles Baldwin, John Patrick. We've done a lot of work on understanding the heritage fabric and how to restore it. The building at the moment has, you know, it's had a number of different lives, including most recently Christchurch and before that the Catholic Church. So it's one of those beautiful old South Yarra landmarks that's been institutionalised in its most recent history. And we've got a design that really is to, it's going to be a reduced footprint from what's currently there with the additions. Restoring the front, just in letting the back breathe with a big northwest garden going in. And yeah, we're delighted that we've got council officers' support and no remaining objections, and we hope to have your support tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Ed. Any questions for Ed? No. Okay, thank you for addressing us this evening. I will now move a motion, which I would request officers please put up on the screen for us to see. That is the one. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I'll speak briefly to this item. So we are considering indeed a landmark building in South Yarra known as Goodrest. It's an early 19th century Italianate mansion, and it is indeed a beautiful feature of the South Yarra streetscape. It's had numerous lives over its journey, as we've heard. It's most recently it's been served as a community centre. It was a proposed childcare centre. I hope I don't offend anyone in saying in more recent times it has become dilapidated, at least certainly in part. So an application to see a building like this brought back to not just its former glory, but really
reinstated as one of Melbourne's finest homes is a great thing to see and very much welcomed by the City of Melbourne. Applications to develop heritage buildings, as we saw with the previous application, always present challenges for us at the City of Melbourne. And look, there were some issues that did need to be worked through with this particular application, and I'm very pleased to see that they have been worked through to the satisfaction of officers. In terms of some of the demolition work that's to occur on the site, it is almost entirely contained to the non-significant 1960s addition, as well as some minor external and internal walls. There will be a basement that will be constructed at the rear of the building, but again, I think our planning officers have done some really good work to improve the design of the basement and also, as a consequence, preserve some of the existing trees on the site. Probably the most challenging aspect of the application does go to some of the trees on the site, which are noted as exceptional trees and registered as exceptional trees under the City of Melbourne Registrar. But I think the officers are correct in saying that given the fantastic landscaping that is proposed for the site, that the removal of, I believe it's two trees at the northern part of the row of, I call them Bhutan pines, but I'm sure most people would probably call them cypresses, I think can be accepted. And I think it's particularly pleasing to see that the two date palms, which are probably the finest examples of palms possibly in the City of Melbourne, are going to be retained and will become continue to be a real landmark as you drive along Toorak Road. So I think this is one of those applications where, given the exceptional nature of what's being proposed in terms of the new development of the residence, the exceptional standard of what's being proposed in terms of the landscape architecture, the landscaping of the site, that this is a proposal which, on balance, councillors can support. Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Underground garage for six cars, I'm in the wrong game. I need to put aside just how interesting I find the difference between this application and the one we considered a few years ago for the Christchurch School, and they are staggeringly different. And again, look at the application on its merits, because in a contest between preserving the heritage building in the round, retaining the trees that are on the exceptional trees register, and building a garage, I want the garage to go first, or at least have the entrance to this garage to be off Leopold Street rather than straight off Toorak. But obviously the applicant and our planners have done a very, very thorough job to consider how to balance all these considerations. And at the end of the day, the only real difficulty I've got is that the hedges in the renders are so high that people can't actually appreciate this building as part of the public realm, because the conservation that's going to go into this building is extraordinary. The decision around what to demolish and what to retain is really well thought through. And the work that's been done to retain two more trees than otherwise would have been the case, the Bhutan cypresses, and make sure that all of that work is as uninvasive as possible is really solid, and the new information that's come to light about when those trees were planted and their significance to Melbourne means that I think it is reasonable that those two trees closest to the new underground garage are slated for removal. The good news is that compared to the Christchurch application, the two palms will be retained in situ, even though they're missing from some of the renders as well, but we're locking that in by condition. Don't chop down those beautiful trees. And the building in the round and the retention of that significant vegetation means that this will continue to be a really significant site and a beautiful site for one household, which makes my eyes water, but I do think a planning permit should issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Any other speakers for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the matter to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I'm declaring that carried unanimously. All right, the next agenda item before us, as I turn the page, is agenda item 6.4, Ministerial Planning Application TPM-2019-4/A for the property 102 to 108 Jeffcott Street in West Melbourne, and in brackets 355 to 369 Spencer Street and 371 to 383 Spencer Street, West Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this item? Taking that as a no. So I will now call on Robert Carletti from Tract, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter via Zoom. Welcome, Robert, via Zoom. Please speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Robert, you've got the floor.
Good evening. Sorry, just very quickly, is there a... Oh, yeah, there's a slide there. Great. Good evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. We're representing our clients, Blue Earth Group, who are the applicants in this matter. Next slide, please. Firstly, we extend our thanks to the council officers from the Departments of Planning, Heritage, ESD, Traffic and Urban Design. The collaborative approach has ensured that everyone today is supportive of the project, as we presented to you tonight for a final decision and recommendation to be made to help. By way of background, the site is subject to an existing planning permit. This was issued on 16th of October 2019 through an agreement reached at VCAT mediation between the previous site owner, DELP, and the City of Melbourne. The planning permit covers three parcels, which have since been sold to separate parties, and our client owns the property at 102 to 108 Jeffcott Street, to the north of that image. Next slide. The original permit allowed for the redevelopment of the site into a residential hotel. The amendment seeks to change the use to apartments, and it also seeks to stage the permit to ensure that each part of the development can be delivered by each of the respective owners. Our client is keen to commence development as soon as possible. And once it occurs, the permit will be activated in its entirety. The development will then be required to be delivered in accordance with the permit and the plan. Therefore, the recommended condition 6A, which requires entering a section 173 agreement, is unnecessary and will result in an administrative burden that will delay commencement of the project. We are seeking the removal of this condition, but have no concerns and welcome all of the other suggested conditions. Next slide, please. The amendment maintains the approved height of the planning permit, as well as the key setbacks to adjoining properties. This ensures compliance with the West Melbourne Structure Plan, including maintaining the approved floor area ratio of 6.32:1. The relationship with the significant Sands and McDougall building is also maintained by providing a curve to its interface. Restoration of some of the key heritage elements of the building, which is part of the existing roof, that continue to be proposed. The amendment also provides commercially appropriate active uses that face McDougall Lane, whilst deleting an approved sky bridge to maintain the heritage fabric of the laneway. The proposal has been advertised to the surrounding community, with over 1,000 letters sent to nearby properties and residents, and has not received any objections. In terms of the internal amenity, the proposed apartments are highly compliant with the Better Apartment Design Standards. Key attributes include apartments that are accessible and cross-ventilated, well in excess of the requirements for baths. Apartments also have good aspects, given the limited reliance on screening. Substantial internal and outdoor communal spaces are provided on level one on the rooftop, again in excess of requirements, whilst a range of 1, 2 and 3 bedroom dwellings provide housing diversity. As such, we respectfully request that the Future Melbourne Committee resolves to recommend they'll issue an amended planning permit. And of course, we're happy to answer any questions or queries you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation, Robert. Are there any questions for Robert from councillors? No, in that case, then thank you, Robert. I am now going to move a motion, which I would ask to be please put up on the screen. Yep, that is the motion. I'm going to now move it. Councillor Luck, second it. Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. I'll now speak to this particular item. So, look, this application is in a mixed-use zone, which does provide for higher densities and does encourage development that responds to existing preferred neighbourhood character in the area. This particular application before us this evening, it originally came to us back in 2019, which the council did vote to support. and we agreed that the proposal was a respectful and well-considered approach to developing this site in the context of the old Sands and McDougall building, which is a really prominent part of the Spencer Street vista. There are, as we have heard, there are two key changes that have occurred since 2019. The first of those is that the previous proposal involved redeveloping both this site and the Sands McDougall building as a single development. Proposal tonight is only for 102 to 108 Jeffcott Street, and in the proposal documents this is referred to as Stage 1 and Sands and McDougall is referred to, building is referred to as Stage 2. The second major change goes to is that the previous proposal was to develop a hotel and office building, whereas this new proposal, as we have just heard, has been converted to a residential tower. In terms of changes to the architecture and design of the building, the main change is, apart from the internal changes required to make it a residential tower, is that we have seen the removal of the sky bridge between the new building and the Sands and McDougall building. I am pleased to report that our officers have done some good work requiring some additional design changes, which I do think improves the building. They include the modification and presentation of the ground floor facades and also increasing ground floor activation, which is something we always like to see and encourage around the city of Melbourne, particularly in the central city. I'm also particularly grateful to our officers for requesting and for the applicant for accepting the removal of the black aluminium cladding that was proposed for the McDougall Lane frontage. And I am delighted that we are going to see instead the reinstating of the original brick laneway treatment. If only we could see more of that around our city, those beautiful brick laneway treatments. There are two additional issues that affect the proposal that I would just like to note. The first of those is that the proposal that was supported in 2019 involved the development of both sites, and we do, and that was done under an acceptable floor area ratio under our West Melbourne structure plan. So we now need to ensure that both Stage 1 and Stage 2 of this development are completed so that the final full development retains that important floor area ratio. And so I am pleased to see that there is a requirement for the signing of a Section 173 agreement that mandates that 355 Spencer Street is developed in accordance with the plans that we endorsed in 2019. And I can say that the City of Melbourne will be strictly enforcing that Section 173 agreement. Finally, I do note that the proposed tower overlooks the Melbourne Assessment Prison on Spencer Street, and that does mean that there were some additional considerations that needed to be taken into account with this application. And I can report that we have put in place some very robust conditions to prevent residents of the new tower being able to see into the outdoor areas of the Melbourne Assessment Prison. And there are also some very robust provisions around the roof of the building as well, again, to ensure that the safety of the Melbourne Assessment Prison is retained. And yes, so there are some very robust conditions there. So with those points in mind, I can commend this to councillors and say that I am happy to support. Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'm happy to support as well. I've seen some try-ons in my 9.5 years here, but asking for the permit to be issued without the Section 173 has to take the cake. This site, this building, will have a floor area ratio of a bit over 12 to 1. The adopted West Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment quite clearly says 6 to 1 is acceptable if we were to take each site as a single site. And so if the applicant wants to take a fresh application, well, that's your starting point. In fact, that's your finishing point. If we're going to split this site up into three, which is what has happened, you can't then take 12.5 to 1 floor area ratio as the base level for all three sites. We're not in the business of just gifting free development rights. The existing application, the permit that cannot be acted on now that the site's been split up, is fair only if you consider all three sites together. In fact, it is incredibly generous if you only consider all three sites together. And so the Section 173 agreement is the most important part of the decision we're making here today, and the Minister simply must include a Section 173 agreement so that we're preventing a completely perverse outcome in West Melbourne. Other than that, the application generally conforms with what's been approved in the past, and it is acceptable. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion before us? In that case, I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I declare that carried unanimously. Councillor Lippitt, I will now call on Councillor Lippitt to chair the next two items, which are heritage planning items.
Move the motions therein, but I think the Deputy Lord Mayor should continue to chair because it's a planning authority matter. That's right. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Next agenda item before us is agenda item 6.5, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C387, Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. Final adoption. Would councillors like a presentation in regard to this item? Has been through. Yes, councillor. Yes, thank you for reminding me of that. Are there any councillors who wish to declare a conflict of interest? Councillor Griffiths.
Yes, I'd like to declare a material conflict of interest as my business is acting as a consultant to businesses that will be affected by this matter.
Thank you, Councillor Griffiths. Are there any other councillors who need to declare a conflict?
Conflict because a family member has a property affected by this amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Ball. Are there any other councillors? Councillor Leilu?
Like to declare a general conflict as I live in the area that is being reviewed.
Thank you, Councillor Leilu. And I note that we still have six councillors present, so therefore we do have a quorum and we can proceed to consider this item. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. In that case, I will call on a councillor to move the motion. Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. I'm happy to second it. Over to you, Councillor Lippitt.
Oh, my iPad's just falling apart, but thank you very much, Deputy Lord Mayor. We're suddenly moving quite quickly, and that is wonderful. Hoddle Grid Heritage Review started politically. Are we okay?
Is there something we need to clarify?
They're in speakers.
I'm sorry. Thank you for that pickup. I do see that we have a request to speak from Luke Denham, from Paul Wilcox. We request the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter via Zoom. My deepest apologies to you, Luke. Welcome to FMC via Zoom. Please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors. Olin Wilcox continues to act for AMP Capital in relation to the amendment. AMP, of course, is the manager of the building at 330 Collins, being the former CML building, which would be included in a permanent heritage overlay under the amendment. The purpose of this verbal address is to just briefly reiterate AMP's view that the place is not of local heritage significance, contrary to the panel's conclusion, and does not therefore warrant permanent heritage protection, having regard firstly to Melbourne's planning policy and secondly the heritage criteria set out in DELP's planning practice note number one. As to the first point, we say that the building fails to meet the definition of significant heritage place under clause 2204. Which requires that such places be individually important at the local level. That is, it's not enough that a place is simply typical of its class. It needs to be locally important in terms of its historical associations or characteristics. And Mr. Raworth's evidence to the amendment and the panel was clear that it doesn't carry these markers. As to the second point, we say again that the place doesn't satisfy the historical, representative or aesthetic heritage criteria in the practice note. In terms of criteria on A, historical significance, while the building is a post-war CBD office tower, this characteristic is shared with many other buildings in Melbourne. In addition, the legibility of the building's original architecture was, of course, diminished in 2003 when the contemporary aluminium cladding was installed and the original shop fronts were replaced and the plaza was infilled. Regarding criterion D, representative significance, the 2020 review itself acknowledged that those alterations had considerably lessened the prominence of those projecting vertical elements. As well, those changes at ground level, which also included the removal of benches, means that the plaza no longer functions as a resting place, and it leaves a children's tree sculpture in a very diminished setting. Overall, we say that this has meant that the place no longer reads as it was constructed. Finally, concerning criteria on E, aesthetic significance, the suggestion that 330 Collins has a locally important aesthetic quality, owing to the sculpture, we say overstates its connection with the plaza and the building. As Mr. Geoffrey Edwards noted, while it may be part of the common post-war trend of office tower artwork, the sculpture is about children. It's no integral or common theme with the building or the CML insurance company. In summary, this building is not, we say, at the local level, individually important in terms of any of these criteria. And we submit the council should therefore exercise its discretion to exclude it from the amendment prior to adoption. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke, for that submission. I would call on Tanya Waltenberg to respond to that, that submission and the points that were raised by Mr. Denham.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. So the points put forward have been presented to the panel. Those same points were presented to the panel, and the panel did have determination and thought through all of those issues. The panel has still determined that it does have local significance under criterion A, which is historical significance, criterion D, which is representativeness, and criterion E, which is aesthetic. So there's no new evidence in the submission today, and the panel has already considered these points in its recommendation, and therefore we believe that the process is now complete.
All right, thank you for that, Tanya. That concludes some submissions on this particular item, so I will now call on a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Leppett, assuming you're still happy to...
Remove the motion, thank you.
And I'm still happy to second it. Back to you, Councillor Leppett.
Just realised that remove is a word and it has the opposite meaning. Look, I'm so delighted that we're at the end of this process. Politically kicked off the end of 2015... the review started in 2017, I believe, including with an expert reference group, and I want to thank everyone involved at the early stages to plan out the process that's led us here. A new and growing heritage team that is overseeing this whole process, and I'm going to embarrass them now. Thank you, Tanya, and thank you, Sue Ellen, your work over so many years to oversee the biggest heritage project undertaken by a local government in Victoria, and unless Brisbane's done something bigger, probably Australia, certainly by scale, probably by cost, let's be honest. But your custodianship of this has been absolutely extraordinary, and I haven't done any of the work, but when I get to the end of my time here, I'll look back on this as
with absolute pride. This is something we've done that is truly extraordinary, and seeing the end of this process with new planning controls and updated planning controls to make sure that those different layers of Melbourne's history continue to be reflected everywhere you look, literally, and in the planning rules to ensure that redevelopment in this city has a nod to that historical past, and we continue to develop a fascinating, architecturally varied city where you can see that history everywhere. This has been a remarkable project. I sat through much of the planning panel that considered this amendment and was sorry to see 11 properties that we proposed to be put forward for the heritage overlay not be pursued. But I am very confident that that process had such rigour behind it that we've got no choice other than to accept the panel's recommendations. That's not just the recommendations about the 11 that should not be included, but all of those properties that should be included, the thoroughness to make sure that we're not imposing an unfair impost, that we're utterly convinced that the social and historical and architectural merits of including these buildings in planning controls are sound. And that process has been extraordinary. And I'd also like to thank, I don't normally do this, the lawyers, but our legal team, informed by Toby and team, but Susan Brennan's representation at the panel was extraordinary to watch, as was the support from our consultants who have undertaken this entire project at Context and the other consultants we've hired to check that work. There's been so many people involved now that I think about it. I should have written a speech. It would have been much shorter. So I do hope that the council at the end of this month also adopts the amendment and that the minister approves it as quickly as possible. And that will conclude the built form elements of the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. Those other elements, of course, are published and online for reading. And if you want to learn more about this marvellous city that we all have the privilege to govern and manage, then that is one of the most extraordinary publications you'll ever read. So thank you to everyone involved. And, yeah, let's get this thing adopted.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. I know this has been through FMC and Council several times, so I'll be quite brief as well, but it does feel like such a momentous moment that I will say a few words, beginning with the fact that it's not every day that a 4,577-page report comes before councillors, and that gives you a sense of the magnitude of the task which has been undertaken with the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. And it's not every day that you find yourself as a councillor about to vote on something which was commenced back in 2013, almost 10 years ago. It has been quite an extraordinary undertaking by the City of Melbourne, but I think one which the city can be very, very proud. Like Councillor Leppard, I do feel the need to single out a few people, beginning with Sue Ellen Hunter and Roz Reimer in Tanya Walkenberg's team, and also acknowledge the great work of people like Toby Hayes, Kat Smart, Anne Lang, Jackie Donkin, and many, many others. In addition to providing updated and upgraded heritage protections to countless buildings across the city, the Hoddle Heritage Review also introduces important new protections like new permanent controls across several precincts, such as the Little Lonsdale Street Precinct and the Swanston Street North Precinct. It also upgrades heritage controls over many of Melbourne's most loved laneways. Particularly got to single out the Guildford Lane and Hardware Lanes and the great work that has been done there and the significant advances which will occur there in protecting those areas. And I also just want to call out the fact that for the first time, the Heritage Review contains detailed analysis of the Indigenous history and heritage within the Hoddle Grid, which was a really delightful revelation for me, I've got to say. So I can't sing loudly enough from the rafters just how pleased and proud I am to have this before council and to be voting on it shortly. So well done to everyone involved. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak for or against this motion? Lord Mayor, Sally Capp.
I'll add my admiration and gratitude. Thank you to the team for their perseverance, their expertise, and their, really personal commitment to seeing this process through. It has had lots of twists and turns and stages, and as the Lord Mayor, I think it's important to say thanks also to our councillors who have been involved, to the very many people across our community who have participated in all of the workshops and Participate Melbournes and provided input, and again to our team for harnessing all of that, bringing their own expertise and seeing this through to a final outcome, which means that we can be confident that we will preserve what are unique characteristics in our city and do make us special. And we're really pleased about that. So thank you very much to everyone involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other councillors wish to speak for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. And I'm declaring that carried unanimously. Well done. The next agenda item is 6.6 for North Melbourne Heritage Review. It's for the commencement of the Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C402 and C403. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to that item? I'll just actually just wait for other councillors to rejoin us. Thank you, Michael Tonta, for being on your game, unlike me. And for the councillors that have just rejoined us, we're now on to agenda item 6.6. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this item? Welcome back, Councillor Ball, as well. We're just under agenda item 6.6. Would you like a presentation in relation to this item? Okay, in that case, I'll call on a councillor to move a motion. Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Over to you.
Do I have a seconder?
I would like to see the motion first.
Okay.
I'll now second it. Thank you.
Thank
back
you,
to
Chair.
You, Council Leppard. I have been caught out before.
I don't sneakily rewrite amendments. I do it hours in advance. This is the beginning of the process. We've just considered the end of the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. Now, I do hope that the North Melbourne Heritage Review is going to be faster than the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review was, but this too is a mammoth undertaking. And the quality of work that Lovell Chen has brought us is extraordinarily high. And I really want to... I'm sure I'll do this at the end of the process as well, if I'm still here. But the work of the Hotham History Group and North Melbourne luminaries like Lorna Hannan and Mary and others who have invested so much of their time, not just for this project, but documenting the history of the town of Hotham, the town of North Melbourne, the suburb of North Melbourne. We couldn't do any of this without them. That living heritage that's brought by people with the most extraordinary memories but who have been collecting information and archiving it for decades is what makes tasks like this successful and a joy. Now, the work of the heritage consultants has been extraordinary as well, and there is, of course, a suburb-wide heritage overlay, well, nearly all of the suburb that already applies. And so the task is quite different to the Hoddle Grid. And with that blanket overlay, figuring out how to draw out in statements of significance what the character of those sub-precincts might be is an interesting formatting task. But I do think that there's a lot of innovations here that are quite exciting. The Hotham Hill residential sub-precinct is well known. The Errol Street commercial strip heritage precinct is well known. I'm butchering these names, but I think you get the gist. Really excitingly is the old benevolent asylum. And of course, that was knocked down, what, over 100 years ago now? But the subdivisions have led to interesting layers of history and the redevelopment of what happened there. But if you still dig on site, you'll find elements of the old benevolent asylum, which had its boom day in the late 1800s. And, well, boom day, I mean, it had a very sordid history in many ways, but its history is nevertheless a really important and fascinating part of the history of Greater Melbourne. And the layers of heritage before it and after it really need to be documented well. So the environmental thematic history that accompanies this amendment is extraordinary. We often produce these extraordinary documents when we do these heritage reviews, but anyone who's interested in the history of the town of Hotham, town of North Melbourne and the suburb of North Melbourne would do themselves a favour by reading this document. It really is extraordinary. This amendment will go on exhibition now if this motion carries now, and I encourage everyone in North Melbourne and beyond to consider making a submission, check that we've got the facts right, and this is another exciting heritage review in our rolling review of suburbs in the city of Melbourne to update those old 1980s based controls. And I couldn't be happier to be moving this motion. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Can I add to your words by saying again what an extraordinary team we have at the City of Melbourne who look after heritage matters. We are truly blessed to have such a talented group of people, and in particular on this project, single out Tanya Walkenberg again, Kat Smart, Jackie Donkin and Robin Hellman, who I know have been have already put in an extraordinary amount of work. I also want to note that tonight's amendments will introduce interim and permanent controls for the first time for a range of buildings and streets in North Melbourne, including the Albion Hotel, the Hotham Gardens Apartments and the Flemington Bridge Railway Station. I think residents and heritage lovers in our city would be shocked to know that some of the buildings that will now be receiving those interim and permanent controls were not previously protected. I think it's a tremendous step forward that we are now moving on that. As Councillor Lippitt has said, this is at the, we're still at the beginning of a process here. Look forward to the work continuing and to future consideration of this matter. Go forth and do well. Any other councillors? Councillor Griffiths.
Deputy Lord Mayor, partly because I didn't get the opportunity to speak on the last motion, but I'd certainly like to pass on my sincere thanks to our team and Lovell Chen for all of the work that has gone into this document. I sat down with a couple of cups of tea on Sunday afternoon and made my way through it, and would echo what Councillor Lippitt said about the both the readability and the interest that can be gained from reading through the whole document. It contains a number of notable and interesting parts of information, and as you highlighted, there are some important buildings in there, such as the Albion Hotel and Flemington Bridge Station, and I will sit down and try and figure out at which of those two venues I have personally spent more time over the years. But in addition to the groups that have already been thanked, both from council point of view, but also the history groups locally, I'd also like to add my thanks to the councillors past and present who have continued to highlight this area of council's work. And I noticed that Lorna Hannan, in her submission, and her very considered submission, singled out Councillor Lippitt for your work on this matter, and would echo that. As you highlighted, she is an absolute doyen of the local community, and with an endorsement like hers, you should feel very proud of the work that you've done in this area. So pass on that acknowledgement as well.
Thank you very much, Councillor Griffiths. Any other speakers for or against? Councillor Leilu.
I just also want to echo, I think, Councillor Leppard's role in this. I think having you know, being in council, your passion for heritage really stands out, and I think our city is so much better for it. There are many times where I've spoken to visitors to Melbourne from international cities who actually really, you know, the stark difference between us and Sydney. Yes, they have an opera house, yes, they have a bridge, but, you know, the feedback from people has always been, you know, I love the heritage of the buildings and the ability to preserve so many. I wonder when we finish all these heritage review, what are you going to do with yourself, Councillor Lurfen? You know, it's... okay, well, I'm going to do it fast then, right? No, of course not. I think I'm saying nice things about you, so I would never want you to do go. Look, I think it's in terms of... as Councillor Griffith said, you know, I live in an area where the Hollowgrid review, and I can see firsthand the work that the team has done in terms of the heritage review, and also even the other, you know, community groups like the Melbourne Heritage Action Group. While we might not agree with a lot of things, but the advocacy and the passion that people have for Melbourne and preserving it is tremendous. And but I really do want to pay my respect and you know, to you, Councillor Leppard, for driving this heritage. I know you've really put in a lot on this, and I just really want to call that out.
Thank you, Councillor Leilu. Any other speakers for or against? No. Okay, in that case, I'll put the matter to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Just looking to see I can see everyone. I'll declare that carried unanimously. I now call on the Lord Mayor to resume the role of Chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, this concludes reports from management to be considered in open session this evening. Councillors, are there any items of urgent business that you would like to discuss? No urgent business? Following on from the comments earlier? No. Good. Then we can move on, and I can say that we do allow 15 minutes at the end of each meeting for public questions as well. I'm looking to see if anybody here would like to ask a question this evening. Rob, please come and take the microphone. Thank you.
First of all, thank you for coming to Parkville. It's been great to see you all here. I think this is a very historic occasion for us, and it's good to see how you earn your money. Grattan Street was closed during Melbourne Metro, both the west side and the east side, which has resulted in a tremendous amount of additional traffic on Gatehouse Street and the rat running through Parkville. We had guarantees at the start of the process with Melbourne Metro that Grattan Street would be reopened, and I sit on a committee with the CYP, Cross Yarra Partnership, where they are reiterating that guarantee is still there. However, from discussions that I've had recently with certain people in council, it appears there is a possibility of a plan within council to close Grattan Street to all but buses and bicycles. Does anybody know about that here?
No.
This came from a very good source. Sorry.
Well, maybe we take that on notice, but it's certainly not known to Evan Council, who's the General Manager of Strategy or Planning, or me as CEO, so therefore I would suggest to you the answer's no, but happy to take it more formally on notice, Lord Mayor.
Thanks very much, because it is critical that it reopens for the citizens of Parkville and also for Lygon Street. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob, and thanks for having us in your neighbourhood this evening and making us aware that this very well-informed source has raised this issue with you. So I'm sure Evan will delight in chasing that down. All right, any other questions from the public this evening? We really appreciate everybody who's lasted till the end of the meeting. Thank you very much. So I think it now leaves for me to say thank you to the members of the public. Thanks for your interest and attendance. To all of our exec team, to council business and support, and to councillors, thank you. It's been a terrific meeting here in Parkville. We've really gone through a number of important items, and I've made it to the end too, closing the meeting at 8:37 p.m. Thank you.